Welcome to Offline, a podcast about building a 100% online and remote expertise-driven business without the bullshit. Hosted remotely by me, Liston Witherell.
And me, Philip Morgan. You'll learn how we're building our businesses, what scares the shit out of us, and hear from our friends and experts who are building their remote businesses too. Welcome to Offline.
Philip Morgan, you ready to hit it and quit it?
Let's hit it. I'm trying to think of some more good James Brown stuff. I don't want to call your name. I don't want nobody to know you're in here. ACO.
Oh, James Brown is the best. He was like the guy in the spotlight and the hype man, like in one person. He was like a split personality.
He was the complete package.
Man.
How did he come with the cape routine, you think?
I don't know. I think it stands out visually. It's really interesting because like he does a lot of spins and splits and stuff. And so it's moving around on stage. I don't know.
Yeah.
I saw him perform about 6 months before he died and he still did the splits.
You're kidding.
No, I mean, it wasn't a young James Brown dance routine, but still I was like, boy, this guy is dedicated.
Yeah. I saw Maceo Parker perform in Nashville and he had this backup singer who did a version of Mustang Sally. And he was just like jumping around on stage. And the guy had to be like in his 60s. Sweet Charles Sherrell is the name of the dude. And I think he might have played with James Brown. And he was doing like karate kicks while he was singing Mustang Sally. It was impressive. And again, probably in his 60s. I hope I'm that mobile when I'm that age.
No kidding. Well, you got to keep moving around, my friend.
Well, let's hit it and quit it. You got to get out of here in 35 minutes.
Exactly, 35 minutes. Start your counter, listener. So today we're going to talk about developing an email list because it's a question I get asked all the time.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's a question you get asked all the time. There's lots of methods to cover. I think one TLDR that I would leave anybody listening to this is increase your surface area online, increase the ways that people can discover you. And that serves to be hugely impactful on developing your email list.
I always feel like my basic answer is so disappointing, which is like, well, it's going to take a lot of work. So let's get more specific than that, I guess.
So here's the thing though, this is a good lead in because anything worth doing and anything that becomes a defensible business asset, by definition, has to be difficult to acquire. Otherwise, it wouldn't be defensible. Anybody could go do it overnight.
Good point.
So just go into this knowing that and also knowing that both Philip and I think email marketing is hugely important. So let's start at the top. Why should I want an email list? Why is it so important?
I don't know. You suggest the topic. Why don't you answer that question?
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. That's a really, I call that the Liston question because you're so good at deploying that question. So blah, blah, blah. I want to do this, blah, blah, blah. Liston, why do you want to do that? I don't mean this in a dismissive way, but it's almost predictable. And it's like hugely important that you begin with that question. Why do you want an email list? My answer is because it's for me been a wonderful way to cultivate an audience and build relationships and build trust and sort of cultivate clients. So that's my why. But hopefully your why, dear listener, is not, well, I heard it's the thing you have to do. I would encourage you to have a more robust why than that because I think it'll help. I think it'll, email marketing is great. It's effective. But it's not easy to do it well and do it right.
Well, and also building the list is only part of the equation. You also have to deliver valuable information to them on a regular basis. So if you're not prepared to do that, then there's not a huge point in creating the list in the first place. So really, to me, it's one of those channels or it's a medium similar to podcasting, in fact, in that I get to, over a long period of time, develop sort of a whole point of view with people. They get to be exposed to all these different ways that I think about things. And of course, the advantage of email is people check their inbox 10 plus times a day, probably more like 20 or more.
I would be shocked to know how much I check mine. I feel it's way more than that.
So I use this plugin called Inbox Anywhere, which by default hides your inbox, but in Gmail, you can still search for things and you can still compose emails. but it has this awful and enlightening feature that tells you how many times you've logged in every day.
Oh my God, what is your number?
Usually it's like around 15, which I'm embarrassed to say, because it should be like once or twice. But I find it, given how many people tend to email me, I find it difficult to only check twice a day.
Oh, for sure. No, mine would have to be 50 or more. I'm not even kidding. That's probably low.
Yeah. And so you can set it also, this is funny, you can set it to delay or completely lock you out if you've checked it over the amount that you want to check it. So if you set it for 5, it'll do a countdown of 15 seconds and you have to wait there and feel ashamed for having broken your previous promise. Well, anyway, let's get to email list building.
We have a note here about quality. You and I both are acquainted with a pretty high number of people who might just fit the category of internet marketers. And you'll see a spectrum of attitudes. I see some people treat their email list like a piggy bank. Like, well, the bigger it is, the more coins are going to be in there. And when I shake that thing, the more coins that are going to come out. And I'm tempted to really like cast dispersions on that viewpoint, but maybe I shouldn't. Maybe like that's perfectly valid. I think that kind of gives email marketing a bit of a bad name. So there I go, casting aspersions on it. But it's a critical question. Like, what kind of list are you trying to build? Big at any expense? It's going to be big because that feels good or that matches your business goals? Or is it going to be whatever size it's going to be, but it's going to be high quality no matter what? Like, that's a part of the why question, is what kind of email list do you want to build? I would say that for consultants, if you just don't know and you had to pick one end of the spectrum, I would pick the size is not important, but quality matters end of the spectrum.
Exactly. I totally agree. One of the mistakes I made early on is thinking, well, my list is only X hundred in the beginning, right? And just picture a room with 500 people in it staring at you, waiting for you to speak to them. That would be so intimidating. And also, for most businesses, all you need is a few clients at any given time. So always, I would say, if you're selling high ticket, low volume, always focus on quality. Don't worry about the quantity of people on that list, because that's not important, especially in the beginning.
Yeah. Last sort of side comment. I've heard people use that same idea to help contextualize a small podcast audience. Like, oh, only 300 people download my podcast, which implies that only at most 300 people listen to it. Well, imagine having a room with 300 people in it, paying close attention to what you're saying in a live setting. Most people would be like, wow, look at this audience that is tuning into me. I guess the point here is we lose perspective when we're thinking about internet scale, like Google's homepage getting millions of visits per minute.
Second.
Second, right. Probably.
Yeah, right.
And so compared to that, 300 seems minuscule, microscopic, and it is, but also it's quite large enough for what we're doing.
That's right.
Okay, so this has been on my mind a lot because I'm working with a group of folks in this program that I created called the Expertise Incubator. They are all publishing daily to an email list, and some of their email lists are like tiny, microscopic. And so this question keeps coming up.
Just for sense of scale, is that like tens, dozens, hundreds? What is tiny?
I think the biggest list is mine because I've been doing it the longest. I have a multi-year head start on everybody in this program. But I'm running the program. So in terms of people who are participating, I'd say the biggest list might be 150, 200 people.
Okay, sure.
And a small list might be 10 or 15 or so.
Perfect.
Yeah, so really small, like quite small. And in our bouncing ideas back and forth before the episode, you had asked what's working for them. And I will say what's working for them, and then we're going to kind of go back to a high level and dig into all the ways that are out there for list building. So what's working for them is LinkedIn. I would say that's by far the clear leader. That's a social media platform. I know our listeners know that, but just yes, to sort of categorize it. Twitter, to a certain extent, also a social media platform. And then direct asks. So like you're on a sales call, someone's like, I don't think this is a fit, but hey, why don't you join my email list and you can learn a lot about what we're doing here, and that's going to have value for you. So that's what I mean when I talk about a downsell on a sales call or a direct ask. Those are the three methods that I see folks using right now. And I think that's going to be some interesting context, because as we go through these, all the methods, maybe not all of them, but some of the more useful ones or more commonly talked about ones, you'll see that same pattern showing up.
Yeah, totally. I took a course on how to build an email list years ago. I'm not going to mention what it was.
Yeah.
But it was wildly disappointing, because in the first week, the advice was go email all your friends and family and ask them if they want to be on your email list about your subject, whatever you're going to be writing about. Now, I'm of two minds on this, right? Number one, I think that it misses the quality point, right? So that's just for people who want to build a giant list and they're not as discerning about who's on it.
Yeah. Relevance is another way to think about that. Like, are the people on the list relevant to what you're trying to do with your business?
Well, and is what you're trying to do relevant to them?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Probably that's even more important. Yeah.
Yeah. But the other part of me thinks the nice thing about that advice is it gets you to think not so much about scale, but more about like, how am I going to get this started? How do I get someone to hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's hard work, right? You're going to actually have to go sort of rub two sticks together to make fire. You don't have the auto light gasoline lighter yet. So it takes a while to get going. So one of the things that I've done that I think has, in terms of scale, has the biggest impact immediately. First of all, if you can go viral on a social media channel, that's by far the most email subscribers I've ever gotten. I wouldn't recommend it. Maybe I can break this down at some other point, but we don't have time to cover it. But I got 450 email subscribers from a single LinkedIn video.
Yeah.
They were very low quality. And I don't even know how many are still on the list. I would guess maybe 100 out of 450.
No, we've never talked about that aspect of it before. That's interesting.
Yeah. But the biggest way that I've seen that you can get a lot of subscribers fast with not minimal, but a relatively low investment is if you do a webinar with someone else. So the idea is you go to them and you say, hey, you have an audience that cares about this thing and you don't seem to be educating them about it. What if I did a webinar for your audience, and the only thing I'd ask for in return is that you promote it and share the list of attendees with me or the list of signups.
Right.
And so I've done a webinar before with not a huge company, but a company that had their shit together in marketing, mm-hmm. and got a list of 450 people overnight.
Yeah. I have friends who've done that. Context here is important. Like, they are further along than the beginner.
Yes.
But they've done that and added 1,000-2,000 emails to a list.
Yep.
Same exact thing, just a slightly bigger scale than you're talking about.
Right. And there are people you can go to and offer to pay for that if you really want to develop your list fast. Again, this goes back to quality, though. You're going to want to make sure that you have a pretty exact match in terms of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to get some tire kickers. Now, being sure that your topic is focused and related to whatever you do will be the first filtering mechanism for who ends up on that list.
Yeah.
But I've seen success with that. I have a friend, I've never tried this, but my friend Margot says partnerships where she has a friend who has an email list and she'll say to them, hey, I have this article that I wrote. I thought you might want to share it with your list because it's so relevant to what you do. People then click on the email link, go to her website and end up signing up because she has a little toaster widget that allows people to sign up there. She said that's been really effective. I just think it's very indirect.
Yeah. Yeah. You're all about the direct ask, which is great.
Well, it's not that.
Or more direct methods.
It's just that it's very hard to predict what's going to happen because so in this scenario, you're going to someone else. Look, think of all the things that can go wrong. You're going to someone else. You're asking for their permission and if they would be interested in emailing their list. Then they write the email. You don't know what's in it. then some subset of people click on it, and then some subset of the people who click on it and read the article subscribe. That's like six steps removed from our end goal.
Yeah, right. So maybe we want to think about methods, especially at the outset, that are more direct, more simple, have fewer points of failure.
Yes, sir. So what's in that category?
A few steps less is guesting on a podcast. And I know we've talked about this before. I used to just sort of go around saying, well, that's secure. I'll just guest on a podcast. It's socially risky to do so. So that creates fear.
Socially risky in the sense of, what if I sound like a dummy?
What if I screw up? What if I embarrass myself? You're taking a social risk.
Yep.
It's not, in reality, a huge risk to your business, but it feels risky. And social risk masquerades as more serious forms of risk all the time. But social risk now in the internet age, I think, is a much less serious thing than it used to be when we lived in tight-knit communities and we had to maintain our status in those communities or risk the consequences of that. But I just feel like in the internet age, social risk is kind of highly overrated compared to the actual risk that it creates. But guesting on a podcast is risky. It makes people feel inadequate. It's often said that the greatest fear most people have is public speaking. And this is a variation of public speaking, being on a podcast is. And so for some people, it's going to be equally intimidating. But boy, it's sure simpler. You have a lead magnet of some sort of free gift of knowledge that you're going to give away as a next step for folks who listen to the podcast. That is the engine that built my email list. It's not the only thing, but it was the workhorse. It was the one that did the most heavy lifting to build an email list of, I mean, I guess it's fair to say somewhere around 5,000 or 6,000 people have at some point subscribed to my email list. Only 2,000 are still there because of some purging I did a while back, and because I email a lot, and because I have opinions, and because I cuss and I try to offend people sometimes on my email
list.
What
a fucking asshole you are.
What a dick. So all of those are things that will repel a percentage of an email list.
Perfect. I like it. Get them out of here.
Anyway, I think it's fair to point to that. Let's just call it 6,000, because that's the number of people who have at some point said, okay, I'll check this out. And a lot of them were disappointed with what they found. But that's not podcasting's fault. That's my fault. Podcast guesting specifically was a great way. You, I think, are in a better position than I to talk about using podcast hosting as a way to build an email list. Or maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. So there are some ways that I build my email list from my podcast. I'd say, so I'm not as enterprising as I could be, just because I want to give a good experience to the person I'm talking to.
I don't know why those two have to be at odds, but please continue.
Well, so I'll tell you why, right? So if I were more enterprising, I guess I could put a UTM tracking code if I had a link in my show notes that would tell me where people that they came from the show notes.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So in other words, yeah, hold on. I just said a bunch of gibberish if you don't know what a UTM code is. What I'm trying to say is I don't know how to attribute directly to the podcast how many people came as a result of what they heard and signed up for my email list.
I see. I thought you were saying you're not as aggressive about using the podcast to encourage list signups as you could be, but that's not what you meant.
But that's also true, right? So I think, so here's what I do right now. On my podcast, I have dynamically inserted ads before and after each episode. Mm-hmm. And I think probably the best way is to maybe prime people in the beginning and say, hey, it's Liston here. If you want to learn more about me, go to liston.io. And at the end, after the podcast is over, I have a quick offer for you about how you can get something for free to help you with your sales, right? Something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And then at the end, I would say, go to liston.io/whatever the offer URL is and drive people that way. What I've done instead is message on a consult or strategy call. And that actually does drive people to sign up.
I hate that word drive because I think it refers to driving cattle anyway.
Oh, interesting. But drive can also mean motivate.
Hmm. Okay, that's better.
Like internal drive?
That's true. That's a better spin on it. Look at you, Mr. Positive Pants today. Thank you, Liston.
I was just writing about optimism bias, but I definitely have it.
Oh, I'm so glad to be on the podcast with you today.
Yeah. All right. Good. I was a total bummer to someone on Monday, so I'm glad I can make up for it on average.
You have renting email lists listed here.
Yeah. So I talked about one way where you're not renting it, but you have to like know the person in order to get them to email on your behalf. Another way is much more transactional than that.
You would just ask, right? You would just say, hey, would you mind emailing your list? How would you approach that?
That's a good question. So like I said, this isn't something I've done. I'd love to ask Margo about that and maybe come back and report.
Okay.
I think my approach would just be like to send them an article and say, hey, I thought this might be an article that your audience might like if you get a second, check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe follow up and say, what'd you think? That kind of thing. I would find it very off-putting.
Okay.
If someone came to me and said, hey, would you email this to your list? The answer would definitely be no.
Nice teaching moment there. Just put yourself in their shoes. Just imagine what it would be like to be on the receiving end. And that'll at least give you some ideas about how to do an ask like that.
So renting an email list, very transactional. There are marketplaces where this blows my mind, but why should I be surprised? There's a business for everything. People, their only goal in building their email list is to sell access to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially what that means is someone builds an email list and they're usually pretty broad. So maybe it's like B2B business owners. Well, what does that mean?
Right. Yeah.
That's a huge number of people. But that would be kind of what you would get with the list. And they would say there's 30,000 people on this list and it's 0.002 cents per recipient or per open in order to send to it. And then you would send them probably some sort of opt-in asset. So a free course that you have. You wouldn't say, hey, sign up for my email list. You wouldn't say that. But maybe you would say, I have a webinar, I have a free course, something transactional that's like a lead magnet.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it, but that's definitely something I'd be willing to try and report back to all of you dear listeners and see what happens. My guess is it will be the same as with all advertising. At least that's my experience, which is you'll get, let's say if I sent to 10,000 people, 3% opt-in. Right? So that's 300. Yeah. And then my guess is something like half or more will just want the thing that I'm giving away and not give a shit about what I have to say. And then I'll never see them again. They'll just unsubscribe.
I'm going to either drop some knowledge here or waste about 3 to 4 minutes of our precious time.
Oof. It's a gamble.
There's this idea of a funnel, right? It's a mental construct. It simplifies the idea of thinking about how someone moves from having never heard of you to giving you money, right? So it's somewhat useful idea, but I think it's an overly narrow view of how marketing works. But if we just go with the idea of a funnel, I think that where you build trust in the funnel becomes important. Do you build it at the very top of the funnel where you are first exposed to leads or prospective clients? Or do you build it further down in the funnel? And what strikes me about this renting a list is that you don't have much of an opportunity to do trust building until that person is on your email list. Whereas with, say, podcast guesting, you're doing something that's socially risky. And that stuff, I see a correlation between social risk and the ability to build trust rapidly. So you get up on a stage, you teach somebody, that's also socially risky because it can expose your lack of knowledge or your inability to explain things well, or you give a talk somewhere, or you guest on a podcast. Those are all socially risky. Those are the kinds of things that build trust really rapidly. And to me, it's very interesting to think about, okay, if all the trust building happens at the top of the funnel, because you're doing what I did and podcast guesting, which to be clear, I did not do that because I'm awesome. I did that because it was easy for me. Okay, so let's be clear. But the side effect of that was the podcast guesting built trust up at the top of the funnel, which gives me the ability to do interesting, crazy stuff when someone's on the email list, which we would consider the middle of the funnel. Anyway, did I just waste everybody's time?
No, not at all. I wanted to give an example, kind of a like in-flight example of that. So one of the ways that I've been driving podcast listeners is I've bought ads. Mm-hmm. And I've now spent, I don't know, like $4,200, maybe something like that.
Nice.
On advertising. And I have an ad right now because I just rebranded the podcast and I've been noticing some attrition. And I think there's lots of reasons for that. So the new podcast is called Modern Sales. It's the same podcast, but I just renamed it.
Yeah.
And if I wanted to maximize the number of signups I got as a result of the ad copy would say something like, learn how to close every client and never lose another deal again. Now, that would get me a bigger response, but it doesn't say who it's for because my advice isn't for everybody.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't qualify on worldview in any way, which I think is important. And so the ad copy I'm using is modern sales advice for independent consultants and firms who love their clients.
Nice.
Okay. So that's sort of the antithesis of a lot of sales messages, where it's not about the client, it's about you and how can I line your pockets.
Right.
And so I totally agree with you. Now, this is a micro trust building demonstration here, but it is a contrast between different ways where I could say, I want the most subscribers I can possibly get, or I just want the subscribers who this message resonates with.
Right. Right.
Can I take a second to air a pet peeve?
Please. We need more of this anyway. So we're not up at our quota yet.
When people say I resonate with that, I'm like, no, it resonates with you. You don't fucking resonate with it. What are you talking about? Sorry. I hear lots of people saying that and like, that's clearly wrong. Anyway.
Mic drop. The podcast is over. I really resonate with that, Liston.
Yeah. Don't say I resonate with that, please. That is not the phrase.
I resonate with your pet peeve about misplaced resonance.
Well, I resent what you're saying.
And one thing that's interesting about the idea of running podcast ads is that you're thinking about two things. One is, well, maybe someone will listen to a podcast and like what I say and resonate with it. It will resonate with them and they'll end up on my email list, but they might also end up becoming a client very quickly. Like I've had that happen. So if we think about the sort of funnel being a way of building trust over time, your ad is, instead of trying to get people straight on your email list, where it might take a little longer to build trust through a text relationship.
Yeah.
And of course, you could use your email to point them to podcast episodes or videos, and you probably do both of those.
Indeed.
So it's a little more nuanced than I'm portraying it here, but I'm saying that you are pointing the ad traffic at something that builds trust rapidly, more rapidly than an email list, which is your podcast.
That's right. Yeah. So let's keep going down the line because we have a few minutes.
Yeah. Let's blaze through the last few things here.
So social media, we haven't spent a lot of time on that. So you talked about LinkedIn at the top of the show. So
yeah.
Best place for B2B related advice is LinkedIn for sure. I'm sure some Facebook ads people would tell me you can find plenty of Facebook or customers on Facebook. I personally don't like Facebook for, I think, personal and societal reasons.
Yeah.
But in each of these platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, paid acquisition via ads is a real possibility, right? So
yeah.
Broadly, I could go to Twitter and say, hey, people who like Gary Vee might get something out of my advice. Or more specifically, people who follow Blair Enns might get something out of my advice, right? Maybe I'm the poor man's Blair Enns. I don't know.
Yeah, I was trying to think you're the Gary Vee for nice people. Anyway.
Right. And I'm sure there's plenty of nice people who follow Gary Vee. So in these places, for relatively low amount of money, you can target people based on their interests, show them an ad, and then get them to convert. So this would be like, sign up for my email course, sign up for my landing page, something like, or for my lead magnet, something like that, in order to get them on your list. You could also proactively, one at a time, target people based on the types of content they interact with. I suck at this everywhere except for LinkedIn. The nice thing about LinkedIn advertising is not only can you target based on title and company. So if you wanted to work an account-based strategy and you, let's say you only work with Fortune 100 companies, mm-hmm. you could advertise there only to them. But this is interesting. You get a list of what companies people are at who clicked on your ads.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting thing, right? Because it sort of tells you what's resonating. Because one of the challenges with an email list is people will often sign up with their personal email, not their work email. Anyway, advertising is a way to build it. This is not like the beginner 100 level method, though, because it's expensive. It's very time consuming. It sounds like, oh, you just turn it on, and as long as you can spend $500 or $1,000, you'll get subscribers. But it's definitely not like that. There's a lot that needs to go into it.
Well, the one piece I will say is perhaps the most extreme view I have, which is this is a channel that will degrade over time in its usefulness for folks like us.
100%.
Because these are all aggregators that will continue to, they want to commoditize you at your expense. And I don't like where that goes. So I think you can use it opportunistically, paid acquisition or social media. I think that's the best way to think about it, is you're going to use it opportunistically, and it may quit working someday. In fact, it's most likely that it will quit working someday. We've got one more thing to cover in our quick overview here.
Yeah, so I do want to cover this. So buying a list. I can't give this justice in just a few minutes, but if you go check out, I did an interview with Mark O'Brien of Newfangled, and he talks about his recommendations for buying a list. The Cliff's Notes are buy a list of at least 5,000 people that are highly targeted. It's going to cost you $1 to $2 per lead. So $5,000 to $10,000 is the entry fee. And here's the kicker. If you, in which you should, cleanse the list, make sure that the emails are valid or as sure as you can be, you're going to lose about a third of it. So the price just went up per email address.
Sure.
The entry level way to do this is go onto LinkedIn, find people who you would like to potentially be your clients. And there's a plugin called LeadIQ, which has great data. It's only $60 a month, and it'll produce 300 email addresses for you every month at just $60. And then you can export them into a spreadsheet. Back to Mark's advice from Newfangled. Maybe we can link to it in the show notes. I'll make a note for myself here. But they, Newfangled, produced a podcast episode, which you sent me, Philip, about how they go about, quote, warming up the email list. Because if you start emailing these people a sales message, which is cold email, not marketing, then most people are going to be wildly turned off, and it's going to require 8 to 12 follow-ups for you to produce leads out of it. However, they give some pretty detailed advice about just like sending one asset with one link in an email, maybe once or twice a month for 3 to 6 months, just to warm up the list. So again, for beginners, unless you're really committed to a long-term strategy here, this is not going to be the best way to do it. And I'll just add, again, I feel weird when I meet someone on LinkedIn and then I end up on their newsletter. I get an email from them with like their company logo and a banner on it. I'm just like, unsubscribe. I don't ever want to talk to you again.
Yeah. Again, more nuance than we can really fit in here. So we will revisit this topic in future episodes.
Yeah. All right. Well, it was a valiant attempt. I think we did something valuable here. I guess other people will be the judge of that.
Yes. Email your votes to liston@liston.io.
Please. I'd love to hear from you.
Talk to you next time, buddy.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye.